Welcome back to the Women Who Roar podcast.
Today, I have a fun and spicy interview with Bethany Phillips, a somatic sex and relationships coach. She's also a wife, mother, and host of her Sacred Sexuality podcast. Bethany's passion is to radically shift the conversation around sex and how it relates to women of faith. She believes women deserve to live an embodied, sensual, yummy life and wants to be part of a fresh movement where freedom and love is at the heart of it all. In today's interview, we cover topics like how hookup and commodity culture take away from amazing physical intimacy, what the wounded feminine is and how it shows up in relationship, physical relationship, and what it looks like in a healthy versus unhealthy relationship, and how toxic relationships shut down a woman's essence. So get ready to connect with your inner feminine in a really fun way. Let's dive in.
Hi, Bethany. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm so pumped for our conversation.
Same. Thanks for having me on. I was really honored to be invited.
Oh, thank you. I feel like you cover a really interesting and spicy topic that is really relevant to some of the things I've been talking about on here. I usually start off by asking my guests about their experience with toxic relationships. I feel like that question has a little bit of a different twist for you, given that you focus on sexuality and just the physical dynamics of relationships.
Yeah, I would say when I hear the word toxic, I have a lot of nuanced thoughts that come with it, because I think when we hear toxic relationship, it's a very blanket statement. It's like the whole relationship is toxic. And I've been married for over 11 years and with my husband for 13. And we've both been toxic in the relationship. We had like toxic traits that we've had to heal from. We've had to do a lot of inner work and therapy and different modalities of healing to push through those parts of us. And I think also when we think toxic, it's very permanent. It feels very like this is who this person is and they're never going to change. And I don't align with that belief system. I really believe in moving on and evolving and being a better version of ourselves and always trying to learn and grow. And when we do that, we can actually get rid of those toxic traits, because really toxic traits and toxic relationships come from wounds, come from childhood trauma and things that were done dirty to us and belief systems that are built up. And so my relationship with toxic relationships is, like I said, very nuanced, because I've been on both sides of the coin. I used to be very verbally abusive. I didn't know how to control my tongue and control my anger. I used to be a really angry person. And so I didn't know how to not explode. And I would push and say every cuss word on the planet. And I would just try and rip my husband down just to get a reaction from him. That's really what I wanted. I wanted this back and forth, and he would not give that to me. So I would do something until it broke him. And we've talked about it to this day. And he's been very kind, sweet, and he's listen. I had my issues. I was unwilling to face things because I'm a fight, he's a flight. And our response to friction was very different from each other. And then on his side, I've been gaslit by him. We've been in therapy sessions where he was able to convince our therapist of something that it was like, I was sitting there in awe of, how is this happening to me? Huh? I'm not insane. Like, this isn't me. And he's admitted to that later on. And yeah, my relationship with toxicity is definitely all over the place and has evolved. And I'm really grateful to say that we've come to a really beautiful place in our marriage where we don't set each other off like we used to. Of course, we have disagreements and things like that, but we've done a lot of work to be able to remove a lot of that from our relationship.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I feel like when you say the word, or when I use that phrase, toxic relationships, people's mind automatically goes to, okay, 25 to 29 year old women don't choose the gym douchebag. That's what that's for.
Yeah.
But I have seen so much in my clinical experience and in my personal experience and in my experience with friends, how you can, there's women who've been married for 40 years and they're in relationships where they are sacrificing their identity or their preferences or their voice to keep somebody happy. And there's toxicity there. And so just because there's toxicity in you or in a part of your relationship doesn't mean the whole relationship is doomed. And just because we say the term toxic relationship, that doesn't mean that's not applicable to you in any way, shape, or form just because you're an established relationship. So I think that's such a key nuance that you brought up.
Yes. Yeah. And we live in a very cancel culture, very intense cancel culture where we're very influenced by that, especially in our relationships. And what we're exposed to on television and social media is actually very different from each other. Social media, we get very polished views of people's lives and relationships. And on television, we get very skewed, toxic. There's a show on HBO, I think it's called F-Boy Island. And it's literally like these women who are trying to fix guys to not be F-boys or who figure out who the F-boy is and who isn't. And it's just, what is happening right now?
I think they're our target audience. They didn't get our podcast to these cows. But seriously, that's pretty crazy. Because you focus on like the physical relationship aspect of things in your work, how have you experienced relational toxicity spilling over into that area?
Yeah. So a big thing that we talk about is understanding the masculine and feminine dynamic and the polarity between the two. And we also talk about the difference between emotional intimacy and physical intimacy. And it's really easy to let the emotional intimacy fall to the wayside because physical intimacy is usually the first thing that we experience. And in our culture today, people hook up and have sex before they ever get anywhere emotionally intimate.
Yeah.
And I think when we look at this, that can be a very toxic way to evolve a relationship and to move into a relationship. We do not preach hookup culture at all. There's actually no sign physiologically or biologically that hookup culture actually benefits us. The only way it benefits us is culturally. And so when we recognize that, when we understand that it's more of a, hey, what's your number? How many people have you slept with? If he hasn't slept with enough women, he's not going to be good in bed. And having this ideology of belief that you have to have sex with more people to be in love with somebody, or the idea that I need to make sure I sleep with him before I'm married, or else what if there's no physical connection? And that it's something that it's a lie we've perpetuated in society for such a long time now that it's become just this pillar of a belief system. And so we really go against that grain of recognizing that actually emotional intimacy is far more important and will get you farther in bed than starting out with physical intimacy. And if I'm being honest, I wouldn't even call the kind of sex that people are having today as intimate. It's very disconnected. It's very disassociated from, and women have gotten so comfortable with stepping out of their heart space and into their head that they're like, I'm just going to have sex and then I'm going to block it out and we're going to move on.
Yeah.
And women were created to be very embodied beings. We were supposed to, our intuition is so important. And because we live in this very masculine society, we forget what our intuition is telling us, what our gut is telling us, what our bodies and our hearts are saying to us of, yeah, he's not worth your time. So understanding emotional intimacy and physical intimacy and who they serve and when they serve us the best is really important when moving into a relationship and avoiding the toxic ones.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that? You mentioned like how we can feel really attractive to somebody with a lot of charisma or whatever. And I would say in my experience, the men that I have felt most physically attracted to, your whole body's lighting up, have been narcissists. I think I've only ever felt that feeling with men who have had narcissistic personality traits. How when I feel that, even if there's nothing wrong in the conversation yet, it's like red flag city for me. I'm like, wait, why am I feeling this? On a more serious note,
yeah.
I'm really glad you described that dynamic because I think there's this commodity culture around sex. And it really reflects a commodity culture around women. Women, there's this idea that you need to have sex with a bunch of people so that you can provide this service and you can be
great
at providing this pleasurable service, instead of looking at it as this is an experience that we're going to explore and learn and grow in together. I have to be like developing my service so I can outcompete other people who are offering service. And even the way that women are expected to present themselves in this like the very sexy way. I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to look sexy, but it's like the expectation that women need to be sexy. And then once you get in a relationship, it's your job to keep the man happy. And if he's not happy with a physical relationship, then you're not, it's usually thought of as the woman's fault that she's not providing enough sex. And
right.
The reality couldn't be more different. I think Dr. John Gottman has research showing that like men are responsible. The way that men set the tone in relationship is responsible for 80% of relational satisfaction or something really, I'm a little dyslexic, so don't quote me on that figure. Bro, is a big nap. And I think I've been told so many times in relationship, oh, my last relationship or this relationship isn't working out because my love language is physical touch and I'm not getting enough of blah, 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 blah. If you want to get physical touch, you need to be engaging in emotional intimacy because that's what a good physical relationship for women. And if you want a good physical relationship for you, it needs to be a good physical relationship for the woman too. And it's really reduced down to this experience of women are like your little sexy toy to play with whenever you're feeling it.
And that's a very dangerous thought when you keep going down that road. When you really take that to the root of things, what we've done is we have made women as objects. We see them as objects rather than beings. And it's dangerous. If I can make an argument on the other side, women have done that to men now. The third wave feminist movement really demonized and rejected men and healthy men too. They've just threw the baby out with the bathwater. And so we're really starting to see it on both sides. Men did it, and it was really perpetuated in media and TV and all this stuff. And we laughed at it. We thought it was funny. And then women were like, wait, hold on. What?
Why am I unhappy?
Yes. This is like funny at my expense. Like, this isn't good. And then we got pissed and we stayed pissed. And so then we started to really disconnect with our heart space. Even when you're saying like, there's nothing wrong with being sexy, there isn't. But I would argue to say, if you're more concerned about being sexy than being in your feminine energy and essence, we've got our lines crossed. And really, that's the sexy is more for performance rather than the feminine is more for you and what you attract with that.
And I think like in a healthy way, sexy is an expression.
And that will expose itself. And that's what's beautiful about it. It's like, once we just change the meaning a little bit, it transitions everything of what you wear and what you put on. It's, I feel confident in this. I'm not just trying to get a guy to look at my boobs. Like, right. I feel so embodied and beautiful and in my feminine essence. And I look like this because I want to attract. I want to pull in what is for me, not what isn't. I'm not trying to get guys to whistle at me on the side of the street or anything like that. It's the what is the intention behind what we're doing? And the part of the feminine, a healthy feminine, is somebody who doesn't have this intention for anybody else but themselves and what they're pulling in. And it's really beautiful to see. But then there's also the wounded feminine. And the wounded feminine is looking for validation. The wounded feminine is looking for things from other people that she may or may not get, and it may or may not be good.
Yeah, that's a dangerous place to come from, because the wounded feminine is your inner little girl, and little girls aren't supposed to be having sex or making out or whatever. Like, yeah, it's not the energy you want to be in when you're...
Exactly.
Having experienced like healthy relationship and toxic periods of relationship in your own relationship life cycle, what are some of the ways that you feel like physical... And maybe we've covered this already, but what are some of the ways that physical relationship dynamics differ from an unhealthy relationship versus a healthy relationship?
Communication and boundaries, for sure. Communication, obviously, I think it's a very clear one, just for the fact of, and here's the thing, I think depending on the relationship and depending on how people feel about themselves and their security within themselves and their safety, they will either communicate it and feel very like, hey, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, this is what feels good, this is what doesn't feel good. Or they'll keep quiet and they'll just be performative for their partner. They'll show up in the bedroom with the idea of, I'm trying to please this person, mm-hmm. rather than like this dual, we want to experience pleasure, intimacy, eroticism together. And we both deserve a release. We both deserve an orgasm. Like, mm-hmm. I want to be here present, not just for you, but for me too. And we have made sex a very masculine thing. It's like, oh, sex is for the guys, sex is for the boys. And I don't think that's true. I just think women have not tapped in to their sexual essence because they haven't had a safe place to do that. And that leads me to boundaries, that we haven't set proper boundaries, that we're having sex younger and younger. And at such a young age, your brain is not fully developed. Yeah. You are not fully developed. You don't know the yeses and the nos and the green lights and the red lights and the yellow lights. When you're the first time you're even having sex, you're not even consciously or cognitively aware of what an orgasm is or what a cervical, a vaginal or a clitoral orgasm. And the difference between the three, those things, you're so new to it. And especially now with people having sex younger and younger, that's really what we're seeing. So when they finally get to a marriage where it's like, oh, this is a person I love, I want to build my life with, and I feel safe with this person. And then they get to the bedroom and it's, wait, I can't orgasm. Like, why am I so out of my body right now? Why is this uncomfortable for it? Why does this hurt so much that goes on through women's heads? And so I say, if you are not communicating beforehand, start communicating. If you're not communicating with yourself and is pleasurable to you and what feels good to you, if you're honest with yourself, you got to start doing that first. And a really great, there's a test online, but there's a book by a sex therapist, Jaya. It's called Blueprint for Your Pleasure, something like that. Don't quote me on it. I'll send you the book. But she developed the 5 erotic blueprints. And I would recommend literally everybody to figure out what their erotic blueprint is before you get married, because then you actually know what turns you on. It's like the love languages, but just sexually.
Yeah.
And there's energetic, sensual, sexual, kinky, and shapeshifter. And when I was reading the book, I was like, oh, I think I'm like energetic and sexual, blah, blah, blah. Just like hearing those words and thinking I knew what it was. And I was like, as I was going through the book, I read the sensual and I was like, oh my God, that is me. And I had my husband read it. Then he started playing within the confines of that blueprint. And the turn on for me was exponential. And so imagine if you had that language and how to communicate with your partner, how to talk to them about what pleases me, what pleases you, knowing what one another love and like, to actually feed into that and how much more pleasurable your sex life be from that.
Yeah. There's a couple things in there that really speak to me. One is just really going back to valuing the specialness of that connection and recognizing the emotional intimacy in it and not just the physical intimacy, because from the biological perspective, our brains are designed to release certain chemicals to mark people as special or other. When you find someone that you're bonding with, just say you haven't even had sex, that you're just dating, and you're releasing a lot of oxytocin because you're attracted to them. But as the relationship progresses, as you bond over shared activities, maybe you share a kiss, whatever, your brain is releasing dopamine, and that dopamine is rewarding you to come back to that person.
Yes.
It strengthens the bond so that your brain sees that person as special, different, other, because every time I go back to them, I'm rewarded. When you have sex, that happens on like steroids. So yes, those chemicals get released in this huge release of dopamine and oxytocin so much that it will actually start unlocking your genes to make more oxytocin and dopamine receptors for you to have an even stronger reaction, an even stronger bond with that person. So sex actually unlocks a deeper level of a neurological bond with somebody. And those are super painful to be broken. It's like some of the studies have shown that Tylenol can help relieve the pain. It uses with physical circuitry in that, like the same circuitry that our body uses for physical pain, it uses for relational loss. And in fact, if you're looking at a photo of somebody you love, your brain will light up some of the same neural pathways that it would if you were a cocaine addict taking that drug or an opioid addict getting an infusion. But we're doing that all the time, like super casually. And then we find a relationship that really needs the protection of the neurobiochemical circuitry of making it special, different, and other. We don't have that anymore. It's broken.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think I have so much of a heart for this line of work, mm-hmm. because we have, there's two ends of the spectrum. We're a faith-based sex podcast. And so we see two different sides of the coin. It's culturally and in our world today versus like purity culture and what we're taught within like the church. And there's this very intense difference of the two of like how sexualized things have become to where it's almost like we don't even see sex as sacred anymore, mm-hmm. versus like how we were taught in the church to really reject our bodies before you are married. And when we do that, especially in today's society, because we're getting married later and later in life, we're rejecting biology and like our bodies responding at a time and way that it's supposed to respond. We're either overexposed or underexposed. And I think there's this bridge that we can find, this middle ground of, okay, I can be in tune with my body, with myself, with my sex, while also rejecting this idea that I have to be sexually active long before I ever find the love of my life and with other people and with multiple partners. And because that's where I think things get really dangerous and the water really starts to get murky. So yeah, there's so much there that lights me up because I have a profound desire to change that narrative, to change the thinking behind sex and even sex being a topic, because as overexposed as we are, when we come to conversations about it, people are uncomfortable. There are people that are ready to change the topic right away. It is painful for people. There's a lot of pain points around sex. And that breaks my heart that we can't have open dialogues that look like this, like what we're having right now, in just casual settings, casual yeah. conversations. And it's because there's just so much pain around it. And that I would love to see that shift.
Yeah, I think you brought up something really good, that sexuality is an expression of your feminine energy. And so you don't necessarily have to be sexually active. One of the cool things about being a woman is you can hold that. Doesn't necessarily mean you're expressing it. Like, we hold all kinds of energies. The most obvious expression of that would be like a baby, a human life. You hold that, but it doesn't mean you're expressing it yet, right? But I think the kind of extreme side that you're referring to is this idea that all sexuality, feelings in women, or just like being aware of that or expressing that even in appropriate ways, is bad. And then once you get married, it's good. And if you're not comfortable with it yet, that's bad, because your job is to service your husband. So I think lots of the conversation around that, it's changing. And I think there's people from faith circles and secular or non-faith circles that are recognizing how we need to create a healthier narrative around it. Why do you feel like physical relationship is always an issue? Like, that's always a feature of toxic relationships. There's always a problem there.
I think it's because it's usually the first thing that people are exposed to. Mm. It's the thing that people experience first. And it's also I mean, it has so much to do. We experience so much biologically and chemically, internally, that it affects everything. There's so much connection there, like you were saying. For men, it's not as much so. Like their vasopressin receptors are like, are open when there is a relationship that they stay consistent with. But when it comes to sex, it's more of just a, cool, that felt good. Check off that box. And with women, that's where we release that oxytocin. It's that bonding chemical. It's, oh my gosh, let's start a life together. And one of those things where, especially if people are having disconnected sex and very surface level sexual activity, thinking that it's going to be beneficial, they've lied to themselves. We have believed a lie for a really long time, because just because you had an orgasm doesn't mean that was a good thing for you.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
It makes you believe that.
I think with that, one of the questions I had for you, and I've talked about this on some other episodes, but I always like getting everyone's niche opinion on it, is why do you think that physical relationship or the sexual component, I don't want to narrow it just to sex, because I think like other pieces of physical relationship, this is applicable to, but I have had women in toxic relationships tell me, it was like so amazing in a toxic relationship, the physical component. So what do you think makes that so addictive?
It's so funny. I was just on another podcast last week and we talked about this, and she was like, it reminds me of like the Israelites and how they thought about like Egypt. Like once they were out of Egypt, they were like, it was good. That's like our first kind of like exposure to a toxic relationship, right? Once we're out of it, we very easily trim the fat and we just look, we're like, oh, but it wasn't that bad. Like,
yeah,
the sex was really good. You know why? Because there was a lot of energy there. There was a lot of like friction going on, and not necessarily bad friction. And we have this really uncomfortable, when it comes to relationships and sex and the like why we keep running back to toxic relationships and the sex being good, that being the first thing on their list, I say trim it, look past it, what's beneath the surface. If you were to go back into the relationship, tell me the best parts of that relationship. And if they are only physical, that is not a relationship. That is purely exchange of sex. That's it.
Yeah,
there's no bond there, because that is an abusive relationship with somebody who has no desire to want to change, no desire to want to evolve and be a better person. And really, that's showing your colors too, of being the victim of a past relationship that was not healthy, wanting to run back to it because there's that, like you said, that dopamine hit. It's like the addiction is there. But what we have to do is start to evolve, start to recognize the truth of those relationships, the things that do not serve us, and that in the long run, in the grand scheme of things, it is not worth your time and energy to invest anymore. You must move forward.
Yeah, I think I love that you really forced the point, like, hey, you're a victim of some type of abusive relationship.
Yeah.
Not necessarily physically, but maybe some emotional abuse going on if that's happening. Because I think for people who are emotionally abusive, or I don't even want to say like the whole person is emotionally abusive, but let's say they have some emotionally abusive tendencies, they know how to use things to control people. So this was a big light bulb moment for me in my narcissistic attraction journey, realizing I love when someone's telling me right away, oh, like dropping the marriage. In my head, I've come to a point where I realized, oh, like this person doesn't even know enough about me to know that they would want to marry me, you know, and they might feel that energy, but if it's a healthy person, they don't need to bring that up right away. Someone who's bringing this up right away is someone who knows that's what I want to hear. And they're using that to try and control me. And I think it's a similar thing with the sexual dynamic and emotionally abusive relationship. They can treat you however they want, but then if they loop you back in with some type of really emotionally, emotionally exciting physical experience. I think it feels emotionally exciting to you, Dad. It creates this sense of everything's okay, we're rekindling. It loops you back in, but it's really a control mechanism. And then I think for us as women, and I think this goes both ways too, but women being more vulnerable, I think a lot of it goes back to attachment wounds. When we are being attracted to people who are unhealthy, it's generally we're trying to remedy some type of broken caretaker or early formative life relationship. And so when we have a physical exchange with somebody who's feeding a caretaker wound, it's, oh, this wound in me is getting fixed. And it creates this like very addictive, but very painful up and down cycle. And the wound isn't really getting fixed. It's just getting reactivated. And it feels good initially when it's reactivated.
Yeah, that like mother wound, father wound is like, ding, ding, they're coming up. It's all coming to the light. But as soon as they do something that triggers the pain of it, that's where the blowups happen. That's where like the breakups happen, all that stuff. And really, we're not actually getting to the root cause and the problems of things. But I do love that you're distinguishing things as not everyone is toxic, but they can have toxic behavior. Not everyone is abusive, but they can have abusive tendencies. Things like that, and understanding that whoever you're with, whoever your life partner is, okay, I just want to go back real quick because I want to tell a story of my husband and I when we first got married. We were very young and we did premarital counseling, and our pastor was like, okay, what do you guys have a grounds for divorce? Have you talked about that? What would make you guys leave each other? And of course, we're like, cheating. If she cheated on me, I'm done. And a few years into the marriage, my husband cheated on me and clearly stayed married. And moved through that. And in 2018, we went to Greece. And while we were there, we were at dinner. And I was like, hey, you know what I was thinking about is, remember when we were talking about grounds for divorce and it was cheating? And obviously we made it through that. What is our grounds for divorce now? What does that even look like for us? And as we were hashing it out and talking it out, figuring out what that was for us, I came to the realization, I was like, you know what? It would really be that if one of us were unwilling to change or evolve and become a better version of ourselves, I think that's where I would be done, because I always want to grow. I always want to learn and be a student of life. And if there are behaviors that we are engaging in that are no longer serving the spouse or the relationship as a whole or our family, and that person is unwilling to change and just cemented in their belief system, I would have a problem. I would have a really big problem with that. And he was like, oh my gosh, you're so right. So that's really been our foundational kind of line of demarcation in the relationship. Hey, I'm calling you out on this. And even earlier this year, I had to bring that to my husband's attention. You are stuck. You are not changing. And I cannot stay with someone who is unwilling to grow with me, because I want to grow with you and alongside of you. I don't want to drag you. And a lot of the times that's what happens. We get attached to the person that is cemented to us based off of the bond, the chemical agents that have been made physically and emotionally, and they're unwilling to move. So you are stuck with them and you try to get ahead in life and you fucking can't, because this person is back here and so you get this whiplash, and it's okay, maybe they'll change, maybe I'll go back to them and they'll come with me this time, it'll be different. So even having awareness and being cognizant of what is for you and what isn't, and I recommend having a relationship with the Holy Spirit, even like what you said, Chelsea, of being in relationships or being really attracted to the guy that talks about the marriage and the kids and seeing that with you. But it's once you realize that's just a conversation or a thing that he knows is going to hook, line, and sinker, like you actually can remove yourself from that and be like, wait, what is Holy Spirit telling me? What do I know about this relationship? Has he given me any download about this guy being my future husband this early on?
Yeah.
No. So I'm not going to do that.
So I have a question. I'm curious about it for marriage. I feel like we've touched on it, but also for dating, what are some signs that you might be in a toxic relationship? What are some things purely from the physical standpoint that could be some flags. Hey, maybe there's some things that are wrong in the relationship also, both when you're dating and just getting to know somebody, maybe even before sex is entered the picture. And then also when you're married and you're having a sex life, or maybe you're not having one, and that's the red flag.
So you're asking what the red flags are.
If I'm diagnosing my physical connection or relationship with somebody, what are some signs in that arena that maybe this is not a healthy relationship overall?
I would say I would go back to the boundaries. I think if you have physical boundaries and the person you're with keeps pushing those, I think that's a really big red flag if they can't respect that. Also, if you keep pushing the boundaries, like I would say anybody who is saying, hey, I don't want to have sex before marriage, and or I don't want to go this far, like I'm comfortable with making out, but that's it. And then you start making out and you start taking your shirt off, or like he starts taking your, he's making that boundary, like those kind of things where it's, you're not even respecting your own edges. I like to call them love edges, and knowing where to say no, and you keep pushing that line, that's really confusing for the partner who is obliging and being respectful of those boundaries. So I would say on both sides of things is a big thing. Physically, if there is roughness, things that you are not,
oh my gosh, what's the word? What is the word? I'm forgetting the word right now.
Like consensual.
Yes, thank you.
Even if it feels like weird to you and you.
Yes. Yeah. I talked to a woman a couple of days ago, and she was talking about how a guy that she was dating was like, they would have sex and it got really intense. She was like, I could feel his aggression in the sex. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And she was like, no, it wasn't violent, but it was like, I could feel like there was something inside of him that he was releasing during that. And I was like, ooh, that is big red flags.
Yes.
And she was like, but yeah, but like afterwards, I told her, she was like, hey, you were intense during that. He was like, I know, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. It's like, cool that he was able to recognize it, but not cool that he wasn't able to control it. And so things with that, when it comes to, and even outside of sex, like when we're talking about kissing or even sensual touch, is he like smacking you on the butt and it doesn't feel good? Or you've asked him to not do something and he's still doing it. And really a lot of it comes back down to boundaries and communication. Like that's really, when we are talking about our physical bodies and even just thinking about how we raised kids, I raised my daughter to know that like, she has body autonomy. Like you can say no, you can ask somebody a high five or a hug. And if you don't want to do that, I'm not going to force you, babe. That will evolve as she gets older. When it comes to touching boys and things like that, it's like, hey, like she knows her private part. She knows what a vagina is. She knows her nipples. She knows her butt. Like she knows all the right terminology. We have to go back down to elementary level, not that elementary, but coming back down to these like ideas of, is somebody respecting my body autonomy? Is somebody respecting like what I'm saying that I like and don't? Am I respecting my own boundaries? Like how do I feel in my body? And then also paying attention to the parts of you that feel uncomfortable when they're touched. So I always say, as women, going back to what you were saying, no, you don't have to engage with sex per se before you're married, or if you're uncomfortable with that, whatever. But I do recommend being in touch with their sensuality, because our sense of self and embodiment, that is what that is. When I touch certain parts of my body, is something being triggered? Does my stomach turn? Is it an icky feeling? Is a memory coming up in my mind? And so when we're talking with a potential partner or in a relationship, you got to know what your red light, green lights, and yellow lights are. And where like, hey, I just want to let you know, when you touch like the side of my hip, it makes me really uncomfortable. I'm not really sure why, but can you not touch me there? And knowing your own body's limits.
Yeah, I think I really agree with a lot of that. I will be like really blatant, and I'm not dating anyone right now, so I'm not having any physical relationship. But that doesn't mean that I feel disconnected from that part of me. Like, I know what I find attractive, and I have probably a lot more conservative boundaries around physical relationship, because I really think the science and also the spirituality of sex, it's a sacred thing that should be protected. But that doesn't mean that I feel cut off from knowing what I find attractive, knowing what would feel good to me physically if I were in a relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, what would feel good to me, but what do I think is appropriate for this stage of the relationship? And just because it feels good doesn't mean I'm going to be doing that right now. And that, when you were talking, it reminded me of in my really toxic relationship that I write about in my book, there was something in our relationship, it was not sexual, but it was physical, that I didn't want to do. And it wasn't about, and it was like, if I were to tell you what it would seem slight, like it wasn't anything that I feel is like intrinsically bad or inappropriate. It wasn't even something that I didn't enjoy, but we were having a lot of issues in that piece of our relationship connected to some things with his past. And I really felt, you know what, for us right now, we really need to build the emotional intimacy. And I think that this is going to be a cheat for us if we do this right now. And there was a lot of boundary pushing with that. And so I think that's a really good example, because it wasn't like, I have this hard line of this one thing. This was something that was personal to me, but my boundaries were being pushed. And that reflected the overall unhealthiness with the relationship.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good thing to be aware of, because what we do a lot of the times, especially Christians, is we put other people's boundaries as our own and we've blanketed it. So it's like everybody is on the same playing field. And the fact of the matter is I was way more sexually interested and turned on, not in the phrase of like I was horny, but I was just so curious about my body. I was so curious about the opposite sex and around that conversation. I've always had that. And there's a lot of people who don't feel that way. There's people who are way more conservative and they're like, I don't really care about that much.
Yeah,
it's not as important to me. And recognizing that the two can coexist. And I love that you are able to still have conservative views, but still be fully embodied in yourself and knowing what you like, knowing what you don't like. I think there's a lot of women that wish they could have that and they don't, because of teachings that were given to them or teachings that they really fully took on and was like, this is Bible. This is truth. And if I go outside of this, I am dishonoring God. I am sinning. There was so much shame wrapped around just being an embodied woman and knowing what felt, things that felt good outside of sex, like just what it was to actually know yourself and really know your body. Because we gave that permission to our future husbands. It was like, it's their job to figure that out about me. I am his, he is mine, and I have to learn that about him, and he has to learn that about me. And yeah, in biblical times, when people got married at 14 and 15 years old, and there wasn't this crazy expose of porn readily available to us and all these steps, like, sure, that makes more sense. You're so naive. You're so young. You're exploring each other's bodies for the first time. It's probably really exciting. It's like, oh, like, sure, mine, have fun. But we're in a way more trauma-filled, nuanced-filled, like, society where we really need to protect ourselves and learn how to navigate our bodies and knowing what is appropriate and what isn't and what feels good and what doesn't. And I think that's important. And not many women do that or know how to do that and feel a lot of shame around it.
Yeah, I think when you're in a relationship with somebody, whether it's your first time or your 20th time or whatever, or it's your first time with your forever partner, there is going to naturally be some exploration because it's just a different experience. But I think that we are really introduced to our sexuality at a much younger age, like you were saying, in our culture. So it's important that we just know whether we're active in that or not, that we know how to move through that and to without completely shutting it down and feeling shame just because we're aware of it. I think it's really the shame about the awareness can get tricky, and learning how to move through that in a way that's comfortable and safe and healthy for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That self-love is very important.
I have one more question for you. So I feel like most women these days have married, unmarried, whatever, have wounds in the physical or sexual relationship department. Either they've been molested or raped, or maybe you were married and things were good, but then someone cheated on you, or there was a porn addiction, or they were mean after sex when the relationship was difficult, or whatever. Most women have wounds in this area. So how do you set some boundaries around physical connection so that you can learn to start trusting it again when there's that broken piece there?
Yeah, I think a lot of that is a lot of solo work. I tell women, first of all, breath work is huge. Movement is huge. If you have sexual wounds, a lot of that can be trapped energetically in your hips, your womb space, your vagina. So vaginismus can come from that. Like literal physical things can be produced from not processing through that trauma. So first of all, I would say you need to be talking to somebody and working through the emotional aspects of that, a therapist, honestly, a psychiatrist, somebody who can actually work and have like tools to give you on how to heal those parts of you, both physically and mentally, as well as I would also start to engage with the parts of you that were hurt and start to create a new relationship with it. Because a lot of the times what will happen is we will take that pain and we will bring it into a new marriage or a relationship, whatever. And then we're like, wait, why am I so turned off right now? Why am I so uncomfortable in my own body, in my skin? I don't even like it when he touches me or kisses me or whatever. And a lot of it is because there's just still so much pain there. I would say have a lot of grace for yourself. This was not your fault. Stop blaming. Like you also have to forget. You got to be able to move past. That doesn't mean you have to love this person or care about them, but you can forgive. So because unforgiveness is such a low vibrate state to stay in, and it will close your body off. You will see it manifest in other ways. And then also I want to go back to the reconnecting with the parts of you that were hurt and that were abused. A lot of solo time to touch the parts of your body, because as women, we are more sensual. We are more five senses. So when we can tune in to our bodies and start touching parts of your body that is safe, that does feel good, and then start working your way and give yourself permission each time you move to another section of your body, say, am I comfortable right now? What's coming up? What does this feel like? It's very intentional work.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable too.
Yeah.
But it's very necessary in order to move past it so you can feel whole again. Because when you experience rape, abuse, molestation, whatever that looks like, turns parts of your body off. And it's somebody took something from you. And there's these holes left in you, and you're left having to like plug them up with whatever you can. A lot of the times there's addiction added to that. I was molested as a young age, and I had a 10-year porn addiction. And that didn't fill the hole that was actually there. It just only got bigger. Really staying in tune with your body, soul, and spirit, and giving yourself permission to heal from that is a really big thing.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think that the non-sexual exploration of your body is really helpful. I was also molested at a young age, and sometimes I like to sleep with my hand on my boob, and it's non-sexual. And it's like we have these, we have such a hyper-sexualized porn culture, it's like boob and vagina sexual, but it's our boob sexual? Yeah, sometimes they are. Sometimes they are nourishments. Same thing with your vagina. So you might have an itch down there and you itch it. Does that make it sexual? No, is your vagina sexual? Sometimes it's functional. Understanding these other elements of your body. And I think the thing is, understanding it's okay to go through seasons of physical activity with your partner. And it's okay in that boundary setting to say, you know what? I'm not comfortable with this right now. I understand that may be difficult for you. This is something I want to grow on. But in order for me to have the safety to explore this, I need to have physical intimacy. I need this on pause. And I think feeling the freedom to do that is okay. And if you can't do that, then that's a red flag. I don't know. My personal thought is for the healing from the toxic dance, not even so much the sexual wounded, leave the physical dynamic out of it for a little bit. When you're getting to know someone or when you're healing, give yourself time to come back into your body and feel what it's like to be with somebody emotionally before you're with them in any way.
Absolutely. I could not agree with that more. Like if you are not emotionally intimate with somebody before you're physically intimate, it is a recipe for heartbreak, honestly.
Yeah.
Because you're giving them too much of yourself and also too little of yourself. It's an invitation to both. because of how flippant we are with sex and how we haven't seen it as sacred for such a long time, even though it still is, it doesn't change that sex is no longer sacred. Sex is still sacred. That's just how it is. That's how it was created and what it was created to be. But because of how society has tried to twist it and taint it and make it like it's nothing, we're giving the entree to both. It's I'm giving you everything and I'm also like so disconnected with it. So there's a lot of baggage that comes with that. And that's why there is so much baggage in the realm of sex and sexuality and sensuality and eroticism.
Yeah, so well said. Thank you so much for everything you shared today. I loved listening to your insight. If people want to learn more, where can they find you?
On Instagram at Her Sacred Sexuality. And we also have a podcast called Her Sacred Sexuality as well. You can listen to that anywhere that has podcasts. And we do have a TikTok, but there's not a whole lot on there. I add maybe once a month, but yeah, that's where you can find us right now. And we're building out our website right now. We have some events coming up next year that we're really excited about.
Super cool. I'll make sure to drop all those links. And thank you again for all your insight. I'm really excited to share that.
Me too. This was so fun. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Women Who Roar podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm on a mission to help protect women from toxic relationships by supporting them and recognizing the signs. I also want to help women heal from toxic relationships by letting them know they are not alone. The stories and conversations I share on this platform and in my book, Losing You, Finding Me, are designed to do just that. I'd love for you to help spread this mission by subscribing to this podcast, leaving a review, and sharing it with a friend. Also consider picking up a copy of Losing You, Finding Me for a deep dive into healing from trauma and toxic relationships. Until next week.